Carlos Fuentes is surely one of the most eloquent of the Latin American critics of U.S. policies. A Mexican author, diplomat, intellectual, a stormy petrel, Fuentes enjoys stirring controversy. He wants to focus the attention of us North Americans on the problems and the possibilities that abound south of our border. This fall, he is teaching at Harvard University, but we spoke with him on his home ground outside Mexico City. Contrary to what the Reagan White House sees, Carlos Fuentes sees no genuine Soviet threat in Latin America.
You don't believe the Soviet Union and communism, world communism, would like to take over Central America?
I don't think they can take it over. The Soviet Union has not staked its credibility on the survival of Nicaragua or the triumph of the Salvadoran rebels. The United States has done it. The Soviet Union cannot possibly sustain an allied regime or a sphere of influence in Nicaragua or El Salvador any more than the United States can wander into Poland and offer all its help to solidarity. It's out of the question. If any revolutionary movement in this hemisphere can avoid becoming a pawn of the Soviet Union, it will do so. The Soviet Union is totally discredited. The ideas of Marxism throughout the hemisphere, it is very discredited. This is not even the Soviet Union of Nikita Khrushchev. This is seen as the Soviet Union that invaded Afghanistan, that suppressed solidarity in Poland, that puts its own writers in jail.
The Soviet Union is discredited in Cuba and Nicaragua?
At the bottom, yes. The Soviet Union...
You would not know that from the votes in the United Nations.
No. I know, because something else happens. Let me tell you, basically these revolutions are nationalistic revolutions. But when they meet the hostility of the United States, then an alliance with the Soviet Union might be seen as a national security imperative for these very small countries.
There is no Soviet conspiracy,
conspiracy. No, of course there is. But it's minimal. It's inconsequential. And it can be dismissed, finally. It can be dissipated through diplomatic and political initiatives. This is my point, you see.
You, Mr. Fuentes, tell us in the United States that we should look kindly, look benignly on the Nicaraguan revolution. Mrs. Baltadano, who was the coordinator for human rights in Nicaragua today, says the government's plan is totalitarian. The Sandinistas are trying to bring every activity under their control. Elections, she says, that are going to take place in Nicaragua, it is as if the head of the prison told the inmates, you have the right to vote for those who will control the details of your life.
I haven't said that the United States has to look benignly on Nicaragua. What I say is treat Nicaragua correctly as you would any other nation in this hemisphere. I think it is none of the business. I know what I'm going to say will not go down well with conservatives or liberals in the United States, but I'm going to say it nevertheless. It is no concern for the government of the United States what the situation inside one of our countries as regards human rights is. This is something that should concern the society of the United States, which is very powerful, has a lot of organizations to pressure and make itself felt and even make the government act. But on principle, I think that the United States has only one road, one effective road to follow in this hemisphere, and that is correct relations with everybody, with the Sandinistas and with Pinochet, with everybody.
And so we shouldn't pay any attention to human rights in Poland, or we shouldn't pay any attention to human rights in Iran?
Officially, no. Officially, no. That is none of the business of a government to butt its nose into these affairs. You have problems of human rights also. Do we have a right to tell you what to do about this or that, about the situation of prisons in Louisiana or whatever you want? We have no right. This is an internal matter of yours.
Yet wouldn't Fuentes have favored the U.S. intervening in Nicaragua some years ago to overthrow the corrupt right-wing regime of Anastasio Somoza?
Honestly, no. Because the United States intervenes for good or for evil, but finally it is always for evil. Finally, it corrupts the internal forces of any given nation when it intervenes in favor of this or against the other. Understand what non-intervention means for us. We have suffered grievously from intervention from your part. We don't want intervention on your part, even when it's well-intended. Let us solve our own problems with our own means.
I read a piece about you in which you were asked to read the mind of Ronald Reagan, and you said you found it difficult to read a void. Words out of your own mouth in the Boston Globe. Do you really think that he is an uneducated man about foreign policy?
No, I think he's a very good politician.
That's not my question.
I don't think he's very well versed in foreign policy. I don't think that either. No.
You will agree that Gene Kirkpatrick, our ambassador to the United Nations, is a scholar of Latin American affairs.
No, Latin American has denied that. She knows a lot about France and the French right wing and Mojas, but she knows nothing about Latin America, and she's proved it constantly.
So all of these people, these well-intentioned people, are simply mistaken.
No, they're not mistaken. They think they are creating a good imperial, conservative, right-wing policy for the United States.
To the end of?
To the end of strengthening the United States, creating a sense of credibility for the United States as a great power in its sphere of influence. The result has been exactly the opposite, Mr. Wallace. I think they've failed miserably.
A re-elected Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
He's going to invade Nicaragua?
He might be tempted to do it. It depends on whether Ronald
You're
Reagan...
You're a sensible man. Yeah. A re-elected Ronald Reagan.
I hope he won't.
Do you believe he will?
I hope he won't. I hope
Because
he
you
won't.
Hear a lot of talk here in Mexico and in Latin America.
I think it'll be a tremendous mistake if he does, because I don't think an invasion of Nicaragua will be supported by the American people. Besides, Mr. Wallace, one thing is sure if Reagan invades Nicaragua, and that is that a lot of American boys will be coming back dead to the United States, a lot of them.
Nicaragua is not being built as a base for the spread of Soviet understandings in this area.
This is one of the greatest mistakes of American foreign policy and of Americans in general, to think that a revolution can be exported, that it can be spread, that it can be like bananas. You can send it from one country to another, or like germs. Revolutions are either bred in the reality, in the cultural, historical, social, political reality of a country, or they have no possibility of being fruitful, of prospering. Che Guevara's Che Guevara's revolutionary campaign in Bolivia failed miserably. If there are fears of subversion from Nicaragua, if there are worries about Soviet bases in Nicaragua, about Soviet or Cuban military aides in instructors in Nicaragua, this can be solved diplomatically. We think there are other ways of doing
Nicaragua,
it.
Nicaragua, no problem.
I don't think it's really a problem. This is a country of 2.5 million inhabitants, which has always been in some way somebody's colony, especially a colony of the United States. It is now trying to find an independent path to affirm itself. Its problem is not becoming a Soviet colony, a Soviet base, Mr. Wallace. It is to cease being an American base, to cease being an American colony for the first time in its history. It has to arm itself in order to face this and be able to negotiate from some strength. It's a very weak country.
But the fear of the Reagan administration is that Nicaragua is only one domino along the way to an ultimate Marxist takeover of Mexico. Fuentes scoffs at that idea. Mexico, he points out, has already had its revolution back in 1910, a revolution that wiped out many of the old feudal abuses, although he acknowledges Mexico still has huge social problems. 75 years after your revolution, here in Mexico City, 2 million people have no running water in this city of 17 million. 3 million have no sewage facilities. And at the same time, the rich get richer in Mexico City. You know that is true.
Yeah. We see the result today, and it is a terrifying result, and we have to do something. We have to do something about it. And we have to do something about the very unjust social structure of Mexico.
This is 75 years after the revolution.
Indeed. But it is a new country. It was changed by the revolution.
Revolution is for change, yes. But at the end of the... Or along the way, one has to judge, is the change for the good or the change for the worse? Corruption among Mexican leaders has been staggering. The police chief here in Mexico City is now in prison in California, having stolen some $12 million. Mm-hmm. Your former president, López Portillo, now living in Madrid, said to be living on tens of millions of dollars. The oil workers union at Pemex said to have stolen hundreds of millions of dollars. You will not deny any of this, I'm sure.
No, but
this
I will.
This in the name of revolution?
I will do something. I won't deny it, but I will compare it. This is a part of a historical process that has happened in every country that I can think of in the Western world. I mean, Mexico doesn't have a monopoly on virtue, but neither does it have a monopoly on corruption and vice. Or do the United States think they have a monopoly on virtue?
Are there votes in the United States in following your point of view as opposed to the Reagan point of view?
You know, it has always been said that every man and woman in this world should have a vote in an American election. Because what happens in your country concerns us all. It will affect us all.
From what you know of the Mondale view of Latin America, what do you understand it to be? The same as Reagan?
No. I think the Mondale-Ferraro view is one that is understood. This history we're talking about. It has understood this past, and it has understood that the basic problems are not in Nicaragua and not in Cuba, but they are in Mexico, they are in Argentina, they are in Brazil. They have to do with debt, they have to do with explosive situations that can drag down your own economy, that can affect your own standard of living, that can affect the employment levels in the United States. These are the really important problems, and not small problems in Central America that can be solved through diplomatic means if everybody is cool enough and everybody believes in diplomacy and believes in solving situations and not exacerbating them.
But the oldest and thorniest problem in this hemisphere is Fidel Castro, the leader who has bedeviled U.S. policymakers for the past 25 years. Cuba.
Yeah.
What should the United States do about Cuba?
The fact is that the United States has been able to live for a quarter of a century with this Soviet ally. It has posed no security problems, really, for the United States that are really important. None whatsoever. Isn't the next stage to understand that that period is over, that it has been absolutely fruitless for all parts concerned, that it has only strengthened Fidel Castro, that it has only strengthened the Soviet Union, and that it has weakened the United States?
How strengthened the Soviet Union?
Because by refusing to talk to Castro and to talk to the Cubans on the problems of Cuba and United States relationships, and insisting on dealing with this only with the Soviet Union because they are the puppet masters, this debilitates the possibility of Castro shifting little by little to a more independent stance, and strengthens the hand of the Soviet Union as a country with a sphere of influence which the United States considers legitimate in the Caribbean. You see the way that American policy ends up by serving Soviet policy. I think that the problem with Cuba is the problem of having the diplomatic imagination, the political courage, to stage an opening to Cuba comparable to the opening to China that Nixon and Kissinger were able to manage in the 70s. I think that in the 80s, the opening to Cuba is as important.
And what you're suggesting is that President Reagan, a re-elected President Reagan, make moves in those directions.
I think nobody is better placed than Ronald Reagan to do the opening to Cuba, of course.
Because
he's a conservative.
Because he's his bona fides, just as Nixon was
just
the man
Nixon,
to go to
indeed.
China.
I don't know if he was cynical, but a Cuban functionary with a little perverse twinkle in his eye once told me, "But you know, Cuba is the perfect country for foreign investment. We have no strikes. We have a disciplined labor force. We have an economy that has created an infrastructure which did not exist over the past 25 years.
And we don't have a press that complains.
And we don't have a press that complains, which is something I criticize severely."
Mr. Fuentes, you're talking about revolutionary Cuba. I mean, you keep talking about revolution and change and the necessity for understanding it and so forth, and yet the excesses that take place in Cuba, in Nicaragua, forgive me, in Mexico,
in France,
do not give a good name, conceivably, to revolution, and perhaps give license to people like Mrs. Kirkpatrick and even President Reagan to say, wait a minute.
They have no business judging us. We may commit the greatest excesses, and they have no business to judge us and interfere in our internal affairs.
No matter your excesses.
No matter the excesses. We will take care of this historically. Don't throw monkey wrenches into this. And let us deal with our own problems in our own fashion, at our own rhythm.